Welcome to the UK MSTN Flash Podcast Show 9. In this podcast, I get a chance to speak with Tom Quinn of iMeta. We talk about mocking and we talk about coding dojos. This podcast was recorded on Tuesday, the 15th of September, 2009. It is the companion show to the Flash newsletter published on Wednesday, the 16th. All of the links mentioned in the show can be found at bit.ly/MSTN podcast. Hope you enjoy it. Hello everyone, and before we go into that interview with Tom, as is customary, I go through some of the highlights of the MSTN Flash newsletter. And of course the first bit of the newsletter is an editorial from myself, and it's quite funny because I'm now reading what I wrote, and I seem to be having slight post-summer blues, which is true. I think we had a fantastic summer actually. I was very lucky with weather, it was a great old time, and now we're firmly into September. And what does September bring? Well, for me, I'm working on a bunch of initiatives which hopefully will help UK developers, and you'll see those coming out over the next couple of months. But I'm also in that moment where I'm trying to get my machine perfectly ready to play with all the beta technology that is already out there, you know, sitting on my download directory, and will come with PDC or 9, which is not far off. One of the things I've been looking at, obviously virtual machines are really useful for playing with that sort of technology, but I've been playing with boot to virtual hard disk. So that is different to virtual machines. Virtual machines use virtual hard disks, but it's a virtualized environment. With boot to virtual hard disk, what you do is you end up with a installation of Windows 7 that you've booted from a virtual hard disk, but as far as Windows 7 is concerned, it's actually running on your host machine. So it can take absolute advantage of your graphics card, all your USB bits, everything you've got, your networking cards, the whole shindig, without going through any kind of virtualization. So it's great for work with things like WPF and Silverlight, where you want to take advantage of, you know, graphics acceleration. And the only thing you get is a little hit, because rather than going, you know, direct to your D drive or your E drive, you're going through all those writes are going to a virtual hard disk, which is a single big file on your real disk. Okay, that came from Scott Hanselman. Scott Hanselman, a very prolific blogger from Microsoft, does lots and lots of great stuff. He gave me a step-by-step for booting to a virtual hard disk. That's one of the links we called out. But one of the other things from Scott this time is an updated 2009 Ultimate Developer Tool List, and he's updated it with a fresh look at the best tools for developers and also power tools. So if you're just a power user on the Windows platform, definitely worth a look. But in fresh discoveries, I've also got Doloto. Now, if you're a Ajax developer, you really need to take a look at Doloto. Now, I'm not, so I haven't had a chance to play with it yet, but it seems quite an impressive beast, and I think it's based on some early work I saw a while back. The idea is Doloto will analyze your Ajax application and will work out which code it needs to bring down for application initialization and which code it can bring down in the background or at the absolute latest on demand on the first execution of that code. Because we're interleaving this download with your application execution, users can just start, you know, using your website really quickly without waiting for all that wonderful code to come down. So it's a great way of getting a really rich Ajax application to start being usable very quickly. Do check out Doloto, which is over on DevLabs. The other fresh discovery I want to talk about, which was at least fresh to me, was the starter kit for Expression 3 and Silverlight 3. If you've not come across the starter kit, this is a huge thing. So we're talking about 32 videos to watch. There's modules, you know, tutorials to work through. It's around about 500 megabytes of content if you wanted to download it, which you can. I found it because I suddenly thought, do you know what? I haven't really done anything at all with Silverlight since the very early days of Silverlight, and I really must have a play with it. And lo and behold, discovered the starter kit. Next up is the poll. It was an interesting one. The poll from the last edition of Flash was on how did your software team score in the JAWL test. We got the results in, and it's interesting. What's interesting to me is how many companies scored 6 or below. Around about 45% of the folks who responded scored 6 or below on the poll test. And I'll be honest, It's a bit disappointing. So what I've decided to do is I've set you guys a challenge, and you can completely ignore me. But if you want to accept this challenge, then go for it, because I'm going to do this test again in 6 months' time, and 6 months after that, and 6 months after that. And I just want to see that 45% go down, down, down. And I'm not arguing that the dual test is the best test out there, but it is a good indicator. As organizations doing development, or as individuals doing development, I think we can each do our little bit to improve how we build software. Related, I wanted to get a feel for how folks are doing with unit testing. This was suggested by Ian Cooper, and the poll this time around is how we approach unit testing code. Are we using manual tests? Are we doing automated testing? Are we doing full test-driven development? Have we got separate testers from developers, which is something you see a lot inside Microsoft? Or are we just relying on our users to test? And I'm hoping that's going to be a small percentage. Out of all these polls, I've noticed I'm doing a little bit of a check to see where software development is in the UK, and I doubt that was my original intention, but I will kind of bring all these things together and probably do a blog post on it and just say, look, in 2009, this is what it looked like, software development in the UK, at least from the several hundred folks who reply to each poll in the Flash. Okay, and that probably is a good time to mention the user group. It is a user group which looks at the use of Scrum. It's the UK South Scrum user group, meets on the border between Dorset and Hampshire, and they meet in a pub. And that's enough from me. The best bit of this podcast is going to be Tom. I had a chance to talk to Tom, who was the author of the article, both about the article and also about something he tried for the first time this month, which is a coding dojo run out of Southampton. I have never attended a coding dojo, but they sound cool, and certainly Tom had a great time with it, and those who attended had a great time, and hopefully inspire you folks to go and think about creating your own coding dojo in your part of the world. Enjoy the rest of the podcast. See you next time. Okay, Tom, so what are you working on at the moment?
Okay, I work for a company called iMeta down here in Southampton. I work as a principal consultant, which means I tend to have technical oversight for projects that I work on. And right now I'm working on a project for a customer called M, and they provide a system into Tesco's currently that allows people to send money. And the idea being that somebody can walk into a Tesco store and purchase a money transfer, and for that they get given a code, and they can give that code back to their family in their home country, say in Poland, and someone can walk in a Tesco store in Poland and they can give over that code and receive their money that's been transferred to them by their family.
Okay, and we first bumped into each other at the Alt.NET conference at the start of August. And you were the helpful chap who was sorting out all my Fluent and Hibernate issues at the time, were you not?
Yes, indeed. It was a very good conference.
It was an excellent conference, it was very enjoyable. Which question I've had since then is, are you using Nhibernate in the work you're doing at iMeta?
I'm not working using it on the current project, but we do use it at our Meta. It's something that we use quite extensively. We've got a couple of fellows here who are very deep in it. One is our CTO, Steve Strong, who's currently writing the full Link implementation for Nhibernate.
Indeed, yes, Steve, I've met before. Okay, so you kindly agreed to write an article for me, and the article was on testables and mocking, and that's an approach you're using in iMeta. How would you explain that to somebody who'd never come across testables and mocking as terms before?
I think the first thing that's really important to say is that it's to describe a concept that people will have used before. They may not have used the terminology, but they will have used it. So where I tend to use it is where perhaps I'm doing test-driven development, or I'm doing unit testing, or maybe even when I'm playing around with a new API that somebody's given me for a new system. And I might not necessarily want to provide a full implementation of something that API requires. Okay, I might just want to create a fake object to pass to that API, so that I can use it and play with it. Primarily, though, you would use it in unit testing. And the idea there is that when you're testing something, you want to isolate down what you're testing as much as possible, because if you're running, for example, an integration test and you've got several pieces that all depend and rely upon each other, any failure in that dependency chain can break your test, and it can be a little difficult for you to understand what needs to be fixed and where the problem is. So the idea is you break it down and you isolate only perhaps one object being the subject under test. Now, where the test doubles, mocking, etc. comes in very useful is when you want to control the dependencies of those objects. So, for example, you might have a banking application and you might be testing a service in that application that performs some function, and part of that service, maybe it has an Hibernate repository pattern for its data access, but you don't want to have a database there just so that you can test that your account service calculates interest correctly, for example. So you may be, what you would do is you could introduce a mock or a stub, and I'll go into this a little more in a minute, of how that repository works. What that would allow you to do is run your tests without having the database there. And it's important to note that these things are things that you can just build yourself. I've built them myself in the past. You just gen up a class that implements the interface, and maybe in the search for account method, you ignore the input parameters and you just spin up a new instance of account and return it with whatever values are important to you in there for your test. Nowadays, there are a framework you can use for doing this as well, and they take a bit of the pain away. They save you writing that code. But people have been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, so in fact, when we were bouncing the text for the article back and forth between us, one of the things that we wanted to get clear was the terminology. And we made the distinction between test doubles being the overarching approach, but there being, now let me think. So we had fakes, we had stubs, dummies, yep, and mocks. And stubs is probably the one that most people have had a go at some point, but they've probably along the way wrote dummies, fakes, and mocks. Is it worth saying a few words on each?
Yeah, I think it is. A dummy object would be what I was talking about earlier, where you might be playing around with an API, and perhaps that API requires a particular object as a parameter to a call, and you're playing around with the API. You don't care about how it's going to consume that object. It doesn't have to be the proper object. It doesn't have to log how it was used or anything like that. So you would spin up a dummy, which literally is just a dummy placeholder object to fill a parameter list. A fake object is somewhere, you tend to hand crank a fake object, and it's very much like a dummy, except you might not have the proper implementation in there of your method. You'd probably have taken some shortcuts in there. A good example would be something like an in-memory database. So you might be running tests, and in some of your tests you might have just a requirement to always return a particular account, but you might be doing something a little deeper, and so you would spin up a fake, because then you could add some behavior into your object. A stub is a much more well-used, heavily used object, where effectively you just want to have something that the unit under test can call, and you've got very good control of what it returns. You don't care about checking any expectation that the unit under test did call it. You just care about the fact that when you call it and you ask it for the balance of an account, it returns 63, for example, and it'll always return the same value. A mock is similar to a stub, except with a mock, what you're verifying a little bit more is behavior. So, for example, with a mock, you may well want to verify that your auditing service was called. So you might have a service that is your unit under test, and it should call an auditing service whenever a user logs in, for example. And so you can provide a mock implementation of the auditing service into your login service, and you can verify that the login method was called. So a mock will store what happened to it during its lifetime so that you can check that back.
Okay. Now, when it comes to using technologies or products to help work in this area, you mentioned a few in your article. Some of those are free, things like RhinoMox and MOQ, Mock. But then there's commercial tools out there like Typemock. Have you investigated some, all of these technologies along the way?
Yes, so RhinoMox, MOQ, and Typemock I've used. Now, Typemock, if you like, is the daddy of the piece. Okay, there are some things that are that are a little harder to do with something like Rhino or MOQ that you can do with Typemock. And to be fair, some people would say that potentially you wouldn't necessarily want to do, but it can be useful. So imagine a scenario where you've got a distributed application and it's calling some services with WCF, and you want to test how your system would happen if a socket was closed underneath you. And you want that exception to bubble out properly from the right location, right deep there in the guts of the Microsoft stack. Now, with MOQ or RhinoMox, you can't do that. You can only do it at an object boundary that you have control of. So say at the interface that was called, you could throw the exception out there. With Typemock, you can actually get it to throw stuff out right from the guts, right in deep in somewhere where you don't have any control of the. Another interesting thing about MOQ and RhinoMox, we spoke earlier about the terminology that gets used, and test double being a collection of mocks, stubs, dummies, fakes, etc. RhinoMock makes quite a clear distinction between a stub and a mock. MOQ makes absolutely no distinction at all. It's one of these kind of religious argument things that the fellow that builds MOQ says that at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. You can use a stub, you can use a mock in place of a stub, and just not bother to verify the expectations on it, and it still does the same job for you.
You've looked at a few. If you walked into a development team and they weren't yet using mocking, or at least using tools, and maybe they were doing some, some stubs, some work themselves, where would you recommend they start?
I would actually start with RhinoMox. I think it's very much just a personal thing, though. There's quite a lot of resource out there on the internet for RhinoMox. There's the documentation there that's maintained on the on AMD's Rhino site, which isn't brilliant, to be fair, but there is also a whole wealth of blogging articles, and Stack Overflow is a fantastic resource for finding out how to do things there. With Rhino, the other thing with all of these things is they, if you pick up the source for them, they come with their own unit tests. And so their own unit test is a good place to start to find out how to do things.
Okay, so that's good. The article's there for everyone to read if they want to have a look at the MSDN Flash and the stuff in there. I would probably recommend people have a read of the Martin. I'll make sure it's in the show notes. The Martin Fowler article on why a mock isn't a stub, and so that's definitely worth a read. And there's another chap at ThoughtWorks who's been doing some nice writing on this subject. But the other bit I wanted to talk to you about was you've just ran your first coding dojo down in Southampton.
Yes, indeed.
How did that go?
It went very well. We had 9, 10 people, including myself, there. We ran it using what's called the Randori Kata. It's worth saying that there's a website out there, codingdojo.org, where you can go and find out some more information about coding dojos. And on there are a couple of katas in terms of how you run the session. And the one that we decided to pick is the Randori Kata. And if you imagine what happens here is you've got 10 people in the room, and you pick a problem and you pair code it. But you have one pair out of the group of 10 who work as a pair and start coding it, and you time box it. We time boxed it for 5 minutes. So you run for 5 minutes, you pick up the problem, you start coding it. After 5 minutes, the person who was leading the pair, if you like, will leave the pair, and somebody else from the group will come and join the pair. And the person who hadn't been leading becomes the leader. And you rotate around the room in this way, and you solve your problem. Or potentially not, as the case may be. There's also a list of useful also called Catters, but Problems, if you like, on the Coding Dojo site, because when we first run one of these things, it's like anything. When you're writing sample code for an article or anything like that, coming up with a contrived example for something is one of the hardest things in the world. And coming up with a problem to solve for a Coding Dojo can also be quite difficult, because you can pick something that's business related for you, but that's not really the point of the dojo. The dojo is there to give your mind a little bit of a stretch. So we picked up and ran with a Roman numeral calculator, which was a very, very interesting problem. Your first reaction when you think about it, and when I put it forward to the group, was, oh, that's easy, we'll have that done in no time. And like most problems, it wasn't done in no time. We didn't finish it during the session. I think...
How long was the session? How long did that session take?
We ran for 2 hours.
2 hours. Okay.
Yeah, we ran for 2 hours, which means effectively everybody got two goes in a pair.
Right. Everyone at that session had experience of pair programming before they attended that session, yes?
Yes, they did.
Right.
But you don't need to have before you come, because it's a very easy thing to slip into.
In terms of, so it's the first dojo that you've ran. I gather there was a lot of folks from iMeta there, and you had just one external, is that right, for this first one?
Yeah, that's right. We had one external, a chap who works for another company down here in Southampton called Mark. Very nice fella. And actually having more externals than iMetians is one of my goals, because I think it's very useful to get people who work from different companies together, because you get a lot of cross-pollination of ideas and approaches, and it can almost force you to try things that you wouldn't have tried before. It opens your eyes to things, and so the more people that we can get involved, the better, I think.
I remember joining the industry many, many years ago, and actually there was quite a lot of mentoring going on across a number of IT companies that I worked with at the time. I'm thinking about companies I now engage with, and that's quite rare to have any kind of formal mentoring or a kind of a coding apprenticeship sort of thing going on. So, taking somebody who's, got the skills, probably got a degree, probably been to another company, but giving them kind of an apprenticeship period where they work with other developers and learn from them. That seems to have sort of vanished to some extent to me.
It has a bit, I think. Part of the reason why it's coming back is because of the Agile Manifesto, and part of what the Agile Manifesto says is that it's about the people first. You can have the most fantastic, amazing tools in the world, but if people are not good enough, they're not going to produce good code and good systems. And I think we're starting to recognize that. This is why things like TDD and unit testing have become a lot more prevalent recently as well, and hence why formal approaches for mocking have started to come to light as well, because we need better code quality, and the ways to achieve that are through better process, more improved approach, and improving people. The people have got to be better.
One of the things that bothers me from time to time is how little I think we've advanced in software development over the last 20 years in terms of the quality that we take into a project and the quality that we want to produce out at the other end of the project. So quality of individuals, people investing time in their own skills and then producing a quality result at the other end, which doesn't mean a perfect result, just something of high quality. My perception is that if you take the industry as a general, over the last 20 years, I don't think we've advanced it a great deal at all. The smart stuff that was happening 20 years ago that we seem to have forgot, and we're now rediscovering those bad practices we ruled out 20 years ago that I see quite commonly when I visit from company to company. And I guess that's the best bit for me, is I get to see a lot of companies. So I do get to see lots of different people doing development. And in general, I don't think we've advanced very much. So there is lots of good stuff going on, and you've mentioned that. But the general feel I get is we haven't advanced as much as we should have in those 20 years.
No, I think you're right. And it's one of those things I often think about, Eric. You think we landed on the moon in 1969, right?
Yeah.
And you look at TV programs from the early 70s that predicted what was going to be happening in the future, and by now we'd be living on Mars, all sorts of other stuff, and we've gone absolutely nowhere.
No, that's true.
And I think a lot of the movement that's going on in IT at the moment is about trying to address that as well. It is interesting that mocking and testables are actually quite old things, but also that things like Solid, which is getting a lot of airtime at the moment, is stuff that came around in the early 80s. A lot of this stuff that Bob Martin, these principles that he came up with in the 80s for C++, and you're right, they're very, very good things that have kind of been forgotten, and we're now relearning them.
No, I think that's absolutely spot on. There's a lot of stuff we seem to have forgotten. CodeGen is another example. You know, we were doing loads of CodeGen on Unix systems way back, and yet if I visit most .NET houses at the moment, they're not doing any kind of CodeGen. They will happily code in many places the same thing again and again and again and again. I think the Code Dojo idea is a great idea, because I think it does give us an opportunity to meet with peers from different organizations and learn from each other and constantly improve. So how can we make this more successful in the UK? So that's your first one. What's your plans for the future?
For the coding dojos, for me, the first step here is to get, as I say, more external people into it. But the second thing is, I think it's something that needs to grow organically. If you remember, we spoke earlier, we both went up to the AltNet group thing up in London, to the Coding Spaces thing. And that was, it was a very, very cool conference, and it was a very cool event. But you know what? It was a bit of a pain to have to get on the train for 2 hours and trek all the way up to London to do that. And that's kind of why I started the dojo here in Southampton. And I think what people need to do is start one up where they are. If there isn't one near to you that you want to travel to, I mean, don't forget, this is stuff that people are doing out of hours after work. Most of us have got kids that we need to go home and see and so on. So you don't want to be trekking miles to go to this. If you're in a city and there isn't anything near you like this, just start one up. Get it out there and blog about it and get on Twitter, and people will come along, because people really do want to learn and to do this stuff.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. Do you have a date for your next one?
I'll have to look it up.
I'm looking up now. September the 24th, yes?
It's a week Thursday, September the 24th.
Right, okay. So if anyone listens to this and they're in the Southampton area, before September the 24th, they should go to your Ning website. It's probably the easiest one, isn't it? So Southampton Coding Dojo, all one word, .ning.com. And they can register interest there. Thank you very much, Tom. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much, Eric, as well.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thank you.